Welcome to another episode of Fit to Teach, where every Monday we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on their wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University and the director of the EOU Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Nathan Marshall. What's up, Nathan?
What's up, Kyle?
For Fit to Teach each week, we provide a summary of a research paper that provides insights into some aspect of health and wellness, and we also suggest an achievable action item that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. The goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate, and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. Today's topic builds on last week's topic. So last week, we talked about this idea of being a hybrid athlete, and that seems to be the terminology that has emerged, at least in the pop world, in regards to people that like doing a whole bunch of different things. They don't want to just say, oh, I'm a runner, I'm a biker, I'm a this, I'm a that. We see a lot of people now, it seems to be quite popular where people want to lift, they want to ski, they want to run, they want to bike, they want to skateboard, they want to do a lot of different things. And I really identify with this. I've always been like that. There's been periods of time in my life where I've focused on one sport or have been competitive, but I've always liked doing a lot of different things and being active. And so this really resonates with me. We talked about how you're transitioning into this as a former college soccer player who's now trying to find his path on lifetime health and wellness.
Yeah.
But you're also interested in a bunch of different sports. You ski, you're starting to run.
Yeah. Not rock climb, though.
You're trying to keep lifting. You had a rock climbing experience this past week.
Probably one of the most humbling experiences of my life.
Our colleagues over, so at EOU, we have two major human performance labs, the LEAP, which obviously I just introduced, stands for Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which I'm super proud of that acronym. I think it's really cool for a physiology lab. Mm-hmm. And then across the hall here, we have a state-of-the-art biomechanics lab. They call themselves the MOVE Lab, but there's no acronym to it. So
it is myth.
I'm going to need an acronym out of that. They're going to, if they want to call it the MOVE Lab, they need to figure out a way. They need to figure out what MOVE stands for.
Yeah, 100%.
The other thing about it is they don't just call it the capital M lowercase OVE lab. They call it the all capital MOVE lab.
Yeah.
Suggesting that it has an acronym, but it just doesn't at this point. Your counterpart, the MOVE intern, you should probably encourage her to come up with an acronym for that.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So they're conducting a study in rock climbing to try and better understand some of the physiologic aspects around rock climbing. And so Nathan last week volunteered to be a preliminary subject for their study. And
it went bad. I got all booted up, mask, GoPro, EMG, everything.
GoPro?
GoPro.
Why?
Because there's some studies where like more experienced rock climbers don't look around as much. So Jackie wants to see.
What are they looking at?
Like just straight ahead. We're like unexperienced. You look down, you look left and right. You know, that's the reason for the GoPro. So I get all booted up. I go up.
What's booted up?
Like I got all the gear on. The EMG, MOX monitor. And then I go up one time.
So we're looking at lactate levels, blood flow to specific muscles. That's the MOX monitor.
Yeah.
Oxygen consumption is the VO2 mask.
And then muscle utilization.
Muscle activation using measuring electrical signals coming from specific muscles. And then you have, did you wear rock climbing shoes?
Yeah.
So you got rock climbing shoes on, you got the harness on. And the wall here at EOU, the new wall in the field house, legit, it's 50 feet tall.
Yeah. So I go up and I'm like terrified of heights, but I'm like, I'm going to do this. So I get all, it takes me like 30 minutes to set up. I go up once. I'm like, okay, I go down. And then
the other thing is just for people listening, it's on what's called a self belay.
Yeah.
So it's just on this, like, you're hooked to this rope that's in a machine and your life is literally in the hands of this machine.
It freaks me out.
And when you come down, you free fall for a second until it like senses how much weight it's dealing with. And then it like clamps down and lowers you down at a specific weight. But if you're not into heights, that first time you let go.
Yeah. So I go up and like, I'm starting up the second time. The first time was fine. And then like I look down and my mask is like blocking my view. So I can't see where I'm putting my feet. And then the GoPro starts falling. And like, I just like freak out and I just like drop. And then like, I don't just drop. I like kick out and then like swing. And like almost hit my legs like on the metal bar.
So there's the metal bar he's talking about is like there's these huge like floor to ceiling windows that are, I guess they have these steel supports that hold them up, and the self belay route or the automatic belay route is right next to the window.
Yeah.
It's like flying into the window. I did not witness this.
And then I land and I can't even hold myself up. Like I like just sit down. And then Jackie's like, all right, the other lab director.
Yeah, the move lab
like,
director.
She's we're done. And I'm like, okay, I climbed for probably 3 minutes. And I'm so embarrassed. Dan was there, who's obviously an insane climber.
Insane climber. Like he just got back from South America climbing some of the world's most technical mountains.
Yeah, just watching me. Just can't even get up the easiest one. This is the most humbling experience athletically I think I've ever had.
Oh, wow. You're a hybrid athlete now.
No.
That's amazing.
It's funny.
All right, y'all. If you're on the fence, if you're nervous, if you're worried about what it's going to be like to come in for testing, it will not be as bad as Nathan's rock climbing experience.
No.
Come on in.
No.
We make it very comfortable and nice for you.
Yeah, of course.
All right, so we're trying to like build on this idea of hybrid. Can you have it all? And is that, in a lot of ways, is that ideal? So that you don't just golf, you run, you lift, you do all these different things. And there's quite a bit of evidence that this is really healthy and really useful. We talked about what this means a little bit last week. We talked about some of the like basic approaches to it. One is that don't force yourself to be, especially if you like doing a lot of different things, don't say, if I just focused on running, I could probably do this. Or if I just focused on, but you don't have to do that, especially if you like to mix it up. And then the kind of other part of that is that one of the practical pieces of advice we provide is that if you are combining, for example, resistance training with cardio in the same session, like you're going to go for a run and you're going to do a lift, you usually want to get your cardio done first and then lift afterwards. There's some molecular biology evidence that there's a what's called an interference effect from cardio that may reduce your kind of capacity or likelihood of getting the full adaptation to lifting. And that doesn't seem to be quite there when you reverse those things. So that's where we left off. Where we wanted to pick up today was with a paper. I actually don't have the exact name to it, but in the current language in the States, we call this approach the hybrid approach or the hybrid athlete approach. In the literature, you'll often see it referred to as concurrent training, meaning that you're doing resistance training and endurance training in a bunch of different ways all at the same time. If you want to do research on this, you can look up concurrent training approaches or concurrent training plans, those sorts of things. In Europe, particularly in Scandinavia, they refer to this as polarized training, meaning you are doing a bunch of different things at a bunch of different speeds for a bunch of different lengths of time. And when you mush it all together, the sum seems to be greater than the individual parts. To test this, a paper came out by these, I'm pretty sure they were from Norway, scientists named Stogel, S-T-O-G-L, and Sperlich. I forget how to exactly, but if you type in Stogel polarized training, you'll find this paper. And what was really cool about this paper was that they actually used, this is a paper we discussed in one of our classes when we're talking about this concept. And the reason why I really like it is because they hijacked the training of athletes, a mixed kind of bag of athletes from a lot of different sports, endurance sports mostly. And what they did was they hijacked their training for, I think, 6 to 8 weeks. And I can't remember if it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Do you remember? Doesn't matter. For around 6 to 8 weeks, they hijacked their training. And the question was, is it better to focus on one aspect of training that should be part of a training program Is it better to focus just on that aspect of training for these significant blocks of time? Or is it better to just train all the physiologic systems all of the time? And they wanted to test this kind of pretty much at the highest level. Every participant in that study was a national team member or higher. And they're so very high level athletes in a variety of different sports: swimming, rowing, running, cycling, triathlon, cross-country skiing. There was a bunch of different kind of endurance-based sports that they, so we were getting like a real, like good picture of what this would look like, even at a really high level. The last thing that I want to make clear about this is that traditionally, and this is for those of you that like coach or you're doing your own programming or maybe you're working with your children or whatever, is that it used to be like you want to add things, and there's just this assumption that once you add something in a training program that it's just there and it doesn't go away. And that's not how physiology works. If you're not training or stimulating something, you will get regression in that area. So you see this a lot with running, where it's, okay, we're going to spend the first 2 months just doing long and slow training work. And that's what typically is called base training. Then you start doing hill work and what's called threshold training, which threshold is where you run as fast as you can for extended periods of time. So you're not sprinting. It's more like, how fast can I run for 20 minutes? That sort of thing. So it's 20 to 30 minute intervals. And that's then you build up your threshold training. The idea is that your base doesn't go anywhere because you already built it up and it's just there. Then you can add threshold. Then what you do is you add speed work. And then there's this other evidence that speed work can be what's called intensity work or high intensity work. A lot of times that's going to be like sprinting, shorter intervals, 1 or 2 minutes all out, and then with a little bit of a rest interval, then you go again, and those sorts of things. And each of these types of like workouts is, each of these types of workouts stimulate a different physiologic system that's important for overall performance. And the idea is that you build these up one at a time. The authors are basically questioning this because physiologically to them, it didn't make sense. I'm like getting in their own head a little bit right now, or maybe just expressing how I feel about it. But physiologically, it doesn't make a lot of sense because as soon as you don't stimulate something, you start regressing in that. So if I'm only focused on base training, I'm not going to have this high-end sort of sprint capacity. As soon as I start focusing on that, I'm going to lose out on base because I'm ignoring it. So what they did is they took this group of athletes and they broke them up into even groups, four different groups. And one group was a long and slow only. One group was a threshold only. One group was a high intensity interval only. And then the last group was the group they called the polarized group, which included all three of those, where they did a day of long and slow, a day of threshold, a day of HIIT training, a day off, a day of long and slow, a day of HIIT training, and they did it like that. And what they found was that within the particular area of concentration, so for example, the HIIT group ended up being slightly faster than the polarized group just in HIIT, but it did not have the improvements in VO2 and lactate threshold and overall fitness and things that the polarized group did. And it was basically the same for all the groups. The idea behind it was basically showing it's way more effective to train all the things at the same time, even though it gets a little more complicated from a programming standpoint. And it's something that we often talk to you all about when you come in for testing and you're thinking about, this is why we like to test you like walking at a little bit of a faster pace and then walking at an incline, for example. So all of it is like sub max, but the idea is to show you, this is what it feels like when you're doing like what would be considered your long and slow day. This is what it should feel like when you're doing a little bit more of a threshold day. And this is what it should feel like when you're doing an intensity day. And it doesn't have to be at the highest elite level like this particular study was. That's really good to mix it up throughout the week, even if it's within a walking program.
Yeah.
And then in regards to the hybrid athlete thing, when you are doing things like maybe you're riding a stationary bike one day and doing HIIT training on that, and then you're doing a long, slow hike on the weekends, plus you're getting a couple days of lifting in, plus you're doing some days where you are walking some hills at threshold pace.
Mm-hmm.
For example, from other studies, you typically get a pretty good response at the beginning of a training program, especially when that training program is set. So if you take like obese individuals, for example, and you say, okay, we're going to start doing a 2 mile walking route every single day. They have a pretty good response early on in that program, but they soon adapt to that and they become really efficient at it. And they stop getting as much benefit as they got initially because their body's adapting to doing that same stimulus over and over again. And so sometimes it's called like muscle confusion or body confusion and stuff like that. Your body doesn't have a brain. It's not like doing complex math and then all of a sudden it's like throwing up its hands saying, I'm so confused right now. But the point is if you alter the stimulus and you mix and match these stimulus, you're providing your body with new things to respond to. And it seems to be more effective than just doing the same thing every day or even doing focused blocks within the same goal for extended periods of time.
Yeah. I think it's also, I find it more fun to do polarized training. It's just to do the same thing every day. It gets super repetitive and threshold stuff and long runs. It's just like, for me, because I'm trying to do this, it's just, I find it more fun.
Breaks it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it does seem to be more enjoyable. People don't, especially if you don't like one of those things, you only have to do it once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this is my only path to health and I don't like it and I have to do it. Like running is probably my least favorite thing and I only do it once a week and it's fine because running's really good for you. But sometimes I don't even run. I was telling Nathan yesterday, I put a weight vest on and went and walked up a hill for an hour and it was considered like long, slow effort. And I got time on my feet and my heart rate was up a little bit, but it's just a unique stimulus because I'm not doing it every day. And because I'm not stimulating the same system in the same way every day, it actually allows my body to adapt to that specific stimulus while I'm stimulating other areas in subsequent days.
Yeah.
So this is another kind of point I'd like to make here, which I think is really important, which is that this is another thing we talk about a lot in class. Humans adapt to exercise sessions on a workout to workout basis. So you actually, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but if I've been training for 6 months and then I do a workout, or if I have not been training for 6 months and I do a workout, I get the same benefit and the same stimulus and undergo the same recovery process at both of those time points. It's just that at one, I'm like in quote unquote in shape and my capacity to stimulate the system is greater than when I'm quote unquote out of shape and I do the other one. But it's really critical for people to understand that even if you haven't exercised for a long time, and even if you can only get out for one long walk because you had a super busy week, that's not nothing. It's absolutely doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can start stringing those together, this week I got out 2 days. I did that for 3 weeks. Now I got out for 3 days. Now all of a sudden this has become a really important part of my life. I'm getting out more. We will adapt. We adapt on a workout by workout basis. Okay. So the point is that you can do a lot of different things in a lot of different ways. And as long as you're spacing them out by about 2 or 3 days each, you will gain the benefits from that individual workout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I think one thing too that I want to talk about, it was brought up in a community health class I'm taking, we're talking about just the standard guidelines of exercise, like the 150 minutes. And one question I asked in class, it was like moderate intensity and then or 75 minutes of vigorous. And I'm like, okay, like, how do you know what you're doing? Like, my moderate intensity is very different from my mom's, right? And then my vigorous intensity is going to be different from Kyle's, right? It's just figuring out, like, I've been thinking about it a lot. It's like, okay, was this exercise low intensity, moderate intensity? And because I never really knew anything else besides high intensity growing up, to be honest. Like, that's how it was. It's like every time. And that was also just, I'm not going to say it was like my coaches, but it was like, it was just me. Like, I was trying to get better. Every time I played soccer, I was like, okay, I'm trying to go to college. I'm trying to earn a spot. So it was like, it was always high intensity.
Yes.
So now it's okay. Now I got to get low intensity stuff. And that's hard for me.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And it feels like at it, times it can feel like you're doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And just remember, and this is, you bring up such a good point, and we did not pre-discuss this, but it sets up the purpose of what we're trying to do with our explorations and our in-lab health assessments. Because what happens, absolutely anybody, you do not have to be a runner, you don't have to be an exerciser, you don't have to be anybody. You come in here, you get hooked up to the oxygen like the oxygen consumption machine, you walk on a treadmill, and then we can tell you, this is what you should feel like, rate of perceived exertion. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard is this? This is your 4. This is your 6. This is your 8. This is your 2. And one of the things that consistently blows people's minds is they hop on a treadmill. They're walking 3 miles an hour. They were just sitting. And when I show them the oxygen consumption number, which is a way that we measure metabolism and metabolic rate and work, one of the things that is consistently blows people mind is that you're about 4 or 5 times greater oxygen consumption when you're walking at 3 miles an hour. And most people rate that as like a 3 or even a 2 in terms of their RPE. And so what you have is you get this like objective measure that you get this objective measure that what I'm doing when I'm walking is not nothing. Mm-hmm. It's 4 times the amount of energy required to sit. Mm-hmm. So it's not nothing. And it's something that I will need to respond and adapt to in the post-exercise state because it is a stimulus. Mm-hmm. And now if you go, okay, one day a week, I'm going to power up these hills. And then twice a week, I'm going to lift. And then I'm also going to go for a long hike over undulating terrain. But then there's days when I'm just going to go easy. And it's, but is that really doing anything? Yes, it's doing something. And a lot of coaches miss this. They just think all out all the time, that's the way it's going to be. And when you do that day in and day out or on some sort of set, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we go all out in this way. Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, we go all out in this way. You end up with a lot of injuries and a lot of burnout. Whereas like when you get to a higher level, a professional level, people that understand the physiology a little bit better, what you realize is one of the biggest challenges that we have working with professional athletes is getting them to go easy when it's in the program. Because the stimulus we want on that day is easy and it's not nothing. And the feedback we get a lot of times from athletes is, I'm a professional athlete. My role is to be forming and I just don't feel like I'm trying as hard as I could. That's the whole point. It's still something from a physiologic standpoint. And when you understand, when you begin to understand how to balance this and the importance of rest and the importance of sleep and the role of balancing these things throughout the week in a polarized way, it typically unlocks this whole new level of sustainability for being active. And what I see a lot of people do is they say, okay, it's January 1st. I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. and I'm going to do this and I'm going to take cold showers and I'm going to lift and I'm going to run. And then I'm also going to spend more time with my family and I'm going to do my breath work and I'm going to do this and I'm going to be great at work and I'm going to help all these kids at work and I'm going to do all these other things. And it's just not sustainable, not because your like motivation and heart is in the wrong place. Just physiologically, it doesn't line up. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do everything every day. And it's actually something I still work on. And it's something that like, it's really hard. But one of the things that this just gives you some insight into my mental status is that like Sunday, I didn't work out, but I was really tired. And it was usually when I'm like that, I'm like, you still have to work out. It's the weekend. You have to take advantage. You don't have a busy day. You have to work out. And even if you don't feel like it, you have to make yourself go and work out. If you, and I'll go through this like kind of distorted way of thinking where I say, if I don't work out, then somehow I'm not like disciplined or I'm not like it's a slippery slope. But so I tested that this past weekend. Sunday, I just worked. I got caught up on grading. I even took a nap. I didn't work out. And now I've had two awesome days this week of workouts because I felt so much better. And it's not a slippery slope when you need rest. And you also know when you're doing the same thing too much because that thing is not enjoyable anymore. You're not motivated to do it. You're sick and tired of doing it. You're sore in specific ways. And that means you're stimulating an individual system too much. Mm-hmm. And yeah, make your plan, but make sure that it's adjustable and that you are adaptable to it. And then make it as variable as possible within some sort of structure. We've had a lot of success applying this to our off-season firefighter, wildland firefighter training program. We do this as a service for firefighters here in La Grande. It was originally started and we publish it on Instagram every day. It's called GRRWOD, stands for Grammaron Repellers Workout of the Day. It's a 20-week program. It was designed by a doctor of physical therapy who's an EOU alum. She's also a strength and conditioning coach. And when we sat down to figure out what these individuals need, you have like wildland firefighting is very dynamic in terms of you have to be strong enough, but you also have some cardio. You have to, there's injury prevention. There's all these different parts on it. And so the way we've broken up this program is they do one long and slow day. They do one hit day. They do one lactate threshold day and they do two lifting days. And that polarized program seems to work really well for these individuals. And that's just an example of like how you can balance these things.
Yeah, totally. The Instagram, like I've been trying to do it too, a little bit, not every day, but I've been incorporating some of the workouts just when I like don't know what to do. And they make me feel a lot better. I think it's definitely played a role in my polarized hybrid approach.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, it's just cool to do stuff that, and it's hard and it's humbling and it's stuff that I don't usually do and it's stuff I'm not really good at.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can tell I clearly haven't stimulated this part of the system very often. So it's like, now I'm getting into that. I've gotten a lot better. I didn't usually do HIIT workouts before that. And I'm starting to do it more now. And like, first day I was talking to Kyle, I think I talked about it on the podcast actually. I was like gassed. Like it was so hard. And then now it's like, okay, like I can do like 30 minutes. I can do a 30 minute HIIT and feel good about it. Like confident going in.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're adaptable. You are adaptable and you adapt on a workout by workout basis. So get a lot of different types of stimuluses in a lot of different types of way. Take rest when you need it. Make sure you get a lot of sleep and you're prioritizing those things. Ice baths are not recovery. Sauna is not recovery. Those things are training load that need to be built into your polarized program as well, if you're interested in those sorts of things. But things like stretching and mindful breathing and those sorts of things are recovery type stimuluses that can also be built into a polarized program. And if you want more insight into your different training zones and how to polarize those things, come into the lab, check it out. Like the health explorations that we offer take a pretty comprehensive approach just in terms of we look at stress. We look at resting metabolic rate. We do some nutrition discussions. We look at different exercise intensities. And yeah, we can provide insight. I feel like we can provide insight that can really get things jump-started and help people on their achieve their goals.
Yeah, 100%.
So this one went a little long as well. Last week did too, but hopefully you're enjoying this kind of series where we're talking about the importance of being dynamic. And we've already talked about how you can get a variety of different cardio exercises. You can get those split up throughout the day, or you can get them in one chunk. You can make up for a lack of cardio during the week with a really long cardio session on the weekends or when you have a chance. We know that lifting weights is really important, but there's a huge benefit to lifting lighter weights and getting lots of reps in from that and focusing on form and those types of things. And it's critical for overall health, functionality, as well as things like bone health and bone density. And now we're saying it's okay to do all those things all the time. And even if this sounds a little overwhelming, if you really zoom out and think about it, it's very freeing because it allows you to do what you feel like doing. And all those things are stimulus and progressing you towards your health goals.
Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. So we'll see you. I think we're off this Friday for Classroom to Calm.
Last Friday.
Oh, we were off last Friday because we're stacking these episodes. Yeah. Okay, good call. Okay, so we'll be back at some point with either Classroom to Calm or another one of these Fit to Teaches. So thanks for listening to Fit to Teach, where we provide insights into health and wellness for teachers and staff each week. We'll see you in the next episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Bye.
Have a good rest of the week.